But if you can put lock yourself into that mindset, you're going to be able to build up so much value and gain so much more skill sets and abilities, because you already have the internal stuff. You have the intangible stuff already, right? Mm-hmm. You just have to show I am willing to start here and work hard as possible to get to the next level. Yeah. And once you do that, you start to see how those dots get connected.
Welcome to the Learn It All podcast with your hosts, Learn It CEO, Damon Lemby, and SVP of Product, Darren Bridget. Our mission is to explore how continuous growth shapes the path to success. Our guests are high achievers who've learned there's always something new to discover. They'll share their stories, strategies, and insights with you. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a seasoned executive, an aspiring athlete, or simply someone who believes in the lifelong pursuit of knowledge, this podcast is for you. Join us now for the latest episode as we continue the Learn It All's journey through a world that never stops teaching.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Learn It All podcast. I'm Darren Bridget, SVP of Product Strategy here at Learn It. And I've got my fabulous co-host next to me. I guess I should go this way. Damon Lemby, CEO of Learn It. And we're joined today by Corey Jackson. I'll go ahead and say, Damon's especially excited. As a former top athlete in college, Corey has a great athletic background and more. Corey Jackson, very quickly, went to the University of Nevada, played in the NFL from 2003 to 2008, career cut short by some injury. I think you'll be able to talk to us about that. And then started Quirks, a talent acquisition firm that helps companies choose from a pool of former pro athletes for specific roles. Welcome, Corey. It's great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Corey, that was just a super quick little blurb of an intro. Can you fill us in a little bit more about your story, your background? How did you get here?
Yeah, I got here on a bus, right? Yeah. So when I was 5 years old, I made up my mind I wanted to be an athlete, specifically basketball player. I wanted to play in the NBA. Grew up a little bit, became a really good basketball player in high school. Went to a very small high school, 1A high school, in the middle of nowhere. Got to my senior year and realized that I didn't have any scholarships. And my guidance counselor said that I probably wasn't going to be a good student. And so I found myself in a place where a lot of people find themselves, just in no man's land, just trying to figure it all out. A job at Walmart, making $7 an hour.
Yeah.
And I did that for about a year. Life was going crazy, chaotic, just doing crazy things, you know, what kids do when they don't have a purpose in life. And one of the things that hit me really hard, I go to Walmart every day to work, and I would see people there like twice my age, maybe making a dollar or two more than I was, but they were miserable. They didn't like their life. And I just knew this can't be my life, man. There's no way that I grew up through being a kid and got to this point and this is going to be my life. And so one day I just had this moment where I was really reflective. I was just thinking about really all the things that I did wrong and how I could do things better. And it put me in a position to where I had to make a drastic change. You know how you can make subtle changes and these incremental changes? I knew that wasn't going to work for me. Like, I needed to make a drastic change. And so just sitting there, I made it my mind. I'm going to quit Walmart. And I didn't have a lot of money, so I went to the bus station. Funny story. Went to the bus station to buy a ticket to go to this town where this college was, which is Ranger College. And when I tried to buy the ticket, I didn't have enough money. So the lady was like, what about a one-way? And I was like, how much is the one-way? And she told me how much it was. And this is like a great metaphor for my life, though. When she told me how much it was, I had enough money to buy that one-way ticket. And I don't know if any of you guys ever been on a Greyhound. I had the pleasure.
Yeah.
When you're on a Greyhound bus, it stops everywhere, like millions stops. And so I'm on this bus, and I was so thankful that I could only afford the one-way, because every time that bus stopped, I wanted to go back home. Like, literally, like, in the core of my stomach and everything in me was like, I need to go back home. I was terrified. Yeah. But I only had a one-way, so I had to stick it out. Got to the town, called the coach from the payphone.
Yeah,
I didn't even know who I was. I'm telling him I play basketball, I'm a power forward, and I'm telling him all this stuff. And he was like, hey, man, just send me some film, and I'll look at it. And I was like, man, I'm at the bus station. I need a ride, man.
That's awesome.
And the guy, I'm thinking the guy is going to hang up, man, because he gets silent on the phone. I'm thinking he's going to hang up. And then finally he says, "How big are you?" I was about 6'5 or so at the time. I said, "Man, I'm 6'8. I knew there wasn't a college coach in America that illegal 6'8 basketball player sitting at the bus station. So the guy told me, he said, "Man, if you're not 6'8, I'm going to leave you at the bus station." But when he got there, he said, "Close enough." And he put me in the car. And then he told me that he couldn't help me. He said, "I got 25 players. I don't have any scholarship money. It's nothing I can do. But take you to the admissions office." So he dropped me out there to see if they can even get me into school, because I never enrolled and applied for the school or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
They got me in, and then I went to the gym and just sit there to watch the guys play. And the coach came up and said, "Hey, man, they're playing pickup. Next game, if you want to get in, feel free to get in." And so the next game came up, and I went out there, and I was on the court. It didn't take long. I was on the court probably less than 30 seconds. A guy on my team shoots this horrible, awkward-looking three-point shot. And I'm thinking, like, let me just go show him I can get the rebound. I'm just trying to showcase something.
Yeah.
I run to the paint. Three other guys run to the paint. We all jump for the ball. And you know how you have these moments where everything just lines up just perfectly?
Yeah.
Like, the ball just literally came into my hand. It's not even like I did anything for it. It just came into my hands. And when the ball came into my hands, I jumped as high as I possibly could. I was directly in front of the rim, and I just slammed the ball back in. Yeah. And the guys that jumped with me, they all now are falling, and I'm swinging on the rim. So it looked like a monster dunk. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And the coach, which is Todd Neighbors, he runs on the court, man. And as he's running on the court, I see he had T-shirts and team apparel and stuff in his hands. And he's running on the court. He says, "Everybody stop. Nobody moves." He said, "I don't know why you came here, but I'm glad you did." I don't know about anything.
Awesome.
And that was my introduction to real life, going through a hard thing, adversity, and then show up and put my all into something. And I didn't play basketball for a whole year. So a lot of things, I think when you put your all into something, something good is going to happen. We just don't always know what that thing is, right?
Yeah. But
fortunately, I was able to make that team and become one of the top junior college basketball players in the state of Texas. Earned a scholarship at the University of Nevada, became one of the top rebounders in the nation. Thought I was going to the NBA for sure, right? I'm one of the top rebounders, average a double. Don't get drafted, play in the summer league, don't get picked up. Didn't want to go to Europe, got offers to go to Europe. One thing about me is I'm super competitive and I'm stubborn, right? Yeah. I do not want to play in a secondary league. That's not what I want to do. And there's nothing wrong. I have people that I knew that played overseas. There's nothing wrong with that. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. So I had the stall tactic because I had some more school left. So I was like, I just told the teams, like, "Hey, I'm going to finish school and then I'll come over there and play." Yeah. And when I got back to the University of Nevada and got on campus, one of the football coaches came up and said, "Man, I'm sorry you didn't make it into the NBA. But I just want you to know you've been playing the wrong sport." And he said, "You got a fifth year. You need to come play football."
Yeah.
And it started from there.
So I got to say, if this hasn't already happened, my biggest hope is this podcast will get you a movie deal. Your story should be a movie. And I know there's a lot more to it. And I'm going to let Damon jump in here in a minute, because you said so many things that I know connect up with things that we care about a lot here at Learn It. And Damon just wrote a book a little while ago, and a whole big section is about going all in.
Wow.
It's a great connection right there. Great. That's a good point.
No, Corey, I just want to say first, it's an honor to have you here. The last couple of days preparing, I went through a lot of your content on your LinkedIn site and other places, and a treasure chest of stuff. I love the videos that you put out there around leadership, and I think it's awesome. And then I know your next step after this, right, was going into the NFL, to Cleveland Browns, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned this to you backstage, and I had a similar story, right, where I played college baseball. And I thought I got drafted and I thought I was going to move on. Didn't happen. But my question to you is something I always thought about and dreamed about. What was it like stepping out onto the field, the first practice, the first time with all these other NFL guys? What was that like? That's something I always dreamed of myself. What would it be like going to spring training and having these Chipper Jones or whatever it was back then? What was that like for you?
It was amazing and terrifying. I was very comfortable as a basketball player. That's what I've done my whole life. So stepping onto the football field with guys who've been doing this for the longest and the best players in the world,
yeah,
essentially, it was terrifying. But it was also humbling very humbling to be amongst those individuals and someone look at me and say, hey, you can do that. You can play with these guys. And so it was definitely one of those experiences that just changed my life. It gave me so much confidence, so much confidence. And outside of football, just in life, it gave me confidence that I can do anything.
And I think, I don't know if people know this, but your transition into football, how you didn't play that much football before you actually, you had another one of those like grabbing.
It was, so when I got to, when they brought me out at University of Nevada, they were just trying me a different play. They was trying to figure out where would I work best. They tried me at a little tight end, tried me at a little defensive end, specialty. They had me doing a lot of different things. And I just never really stuck with something because it was a, you got to think, this is Division I football. The gap for is this technique and terminology and all these things was so wide that if you just, if you wasn't saying, hey, run down the field, I'm just going to throw the ball, or then I was lost, man. Cause you know, those, that terminology was just crazy. So I didn't play but 12 plays. Fun fact, I got my first tackle last game of the season against Boise State. Tackle for loss. But what happened was after the season, I'm thinking like, okay, now I've really got to go to Europe and figure this thing out.
Yeah.
And my phone ring one day and it's one of the coaches and they're saying, man, we got 30 NFL scouts up here asking about you. And they were doing the pro day. And I'm like, they're asking about me. And it was like, yeah, they want to see the basketball player. And I go out there and I do this workout. But before we do the workout, when I walk out, these guys are like, all of the scouts watch basketball film on me. So they knew who I was.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're talking to me before the workout. They was like, oh, Corey, this, we're looking forward to seeing you work out. Guys, I do the whole workout, right? I'm drenched in sweat, just like doing everything I can to try to impress these guys. And at the end of the workout, they just walked away. They didn't even say anything. They just walked away. Yeah. And I'm like, man, I must have really blew it. And walking off the field, and I'm just confused. And then my phone rings, and it's an agent. And the guy says, hey, man, I heard you killed it in your workout. And then I hang up with this guy, and my phone rings again. It's another agent, and it just started going crazy. And I'm like, wow, this is like a surreal moment. And then so I end up signing with the Browns. I didn't get drafted. I ended up signing free agent and signed with the Browns. And it was just one of those experiences. The that moment when they called me, it was like you guys said, like a movie, man. It's just, it was so emotional because I went from working at Walmart to like no one offered me a scholarship to now I'm going to play on the biggest stage in America. The NFL as an NFL athlete. So it was like, I was so emotional and just, empowered, and I could do anything. I felt like I could do anything.
Yeah. That's awesome. There's something really interesting what you're saying there, which is such a leadership thing, which is you had your eye on the prize the whole time. Like you knew what you wanted and you talked about being stubborn, but at the same time, there's a certain flexibility and adaptability that you had because it didn't go exactly how you thought it would. You were able to pivot into football and you made that work and that actually was the right move for you. So it's, I don't know, there's a certain kind of wisdom for knowing like when you stay the course and when you need to be flexible.
Yeah. And I grew up as a kid, I grew up in church a lot and it was a passage that says your gifts will make room for you. And I feel like that's what happens when we apply our passions and our gifts and the things, something's going to happen. We just have to make sure that we're making sure that we're paying attention to know what that something is, because we're not going to have the answers. We just have to use what we have, and it's going to open up some new doors for us. And that's happened to me in life over and over again, even in business, same thing.
Yeah. Corey, backstage, you told us, and I love this. One of my favorite quotes, but I'm going to butcher it, but it's by David Thomas from Wendy's. He talks about, there's no such thing as you create your own luck. What you said backstage was good luck happens when. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, what we talked about?
Yeah. So good luck happens when you are applying everything that you have, when you're doing all you can do, because that's all you can do, right? It's all laid out. A lot of times we reserve so much. It reminds me of how, and I know you guys play sports, so this is probably going to resonate with you. But so in team sports, when we are training or doing off-season workout conditioning, a lot of times like we would have this unlimited amount of sprints that we have to do, meaning we don't know when it's going to stop. And so we're just doing these sprints. And as you're doing these sprints, you are trying to protect yourself from dying. You're like, I'm going to save a little bit. I'm going to hold back a little bit.
Yeah.
And so this will happen all the time. And then we will get to a certain point and the coach says, okay, listen, and by the way, everybody's can't go no more. Everybody's bend over and they're like, I don't have any more left. And the coach said, hey, this is the last one. Give me everything you got. Yeah. And the last one looks better than the first one because we're reserving so much. And I feel like we go through life on reserve. Like we're reserving everything for this special moment that's never going to happen if we don't deploy the things that we have. And I just feel like that's what happens. And I've learned at an early age is you just have to, everything that you have is made for you to use and you have to exhaust it because it's infinite. You're going to have more. Damon, I just heard you wrote a book. You have infinite amount of books in you. Like you can keep writing, but like you have so much in you that you can't ever run out. But we play the game like we're going to run out of something. Like we're going to not have enough, but we have more than what we need.
That energy, that mindset you clearly brought to your life after football, which I know was probably cut short a little more than you were hoping for, I think, because of an injury and stuff. But that mindset, can you talk about like how you've been bringing that forward since then?
Yeah, obviously sports gave me a lot of confidence, but there's still a huge learning curve when you're transitioning from sports into entrepreneurship or business. But one of the things that I learned was what we were just talking about, using everything you have. So when I got to a point where my career was really questionable, someone came to me and said, hey, man, come over here and speak to this group of people. We want to hear your story, right? This is the first time anyone ever said that to me.
Yeah.
And I said, no. I'm like, man, I don't want to do that. I'm an athlete. I'm trying to play sports. And the guy was persistent, man. He wouldn't stop. He was just like, man, I'm telling you, you need to come over here and do this.
Yeah.
And I never knew you could get paid to do it, by the way. And then I said, hey, man, the last time he asked me, he was like, just come for a few minutes. And then they offered me a check. And so he underselled the thing. So he said, hey, man, it's just a few teenagers was kind of having a hard time. That's how he sold it to me.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, fine. So I don't plan anything to say. I don't have anything to say. I'm just going to go and say, hey, guys, just keep working hard. And just the basic kind of powwow type thing. And he walks me into this building and I go through this back door and I'm coming in and I'm really thinking, okay, I'm about to go sit down with 3 or 4 kids. Walks me onto the stage and I look out and it's like 400 kids.
Yeah.
And these wasn't regular kids. This was like this boot camp for kids, like on their last chance. Like they're going to go to jail. Like these kids are going to go to jail. So now I'm like, my heart's beating. I'm like, what the heck? This guy never told me I was going to all these kids. And so as soon as he walked me on stage, he introduces me, hand me the mic. And I'm sitting there. And I look at these kids. And you know how you can see in someone's face, like they like hope for something. Like they want to hear something that's going to resonate with them. And that was the first time I told the story, the Walmart to the NFL story. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't even know it was a story before then, by the way. And, and I told that story. And guys, at the end of the talk, we all were in tears.
Wow. Like
we all were in tears. It was so emotional. Yeah. One for me, because I didn't even realize my story, what it was. And then them, it gave them so much more hope. Like these kids were from 12 years old to 17 years old.
Yeah.
So like these kids were in this space where their parents had given up on them.
Yeah.
And that story just affected everybody in the room, including myself. And it was, I got goosebumps all over. It was crazy, guys. It was crazy. And that's when I really knew I had a story. And that kind of led me into speaking. I started speaking right away. I knew some people and they heard about the story and I started getting invited to these conferences and I just started telling the story everywhere as much as I possibly could. And that led me into starting Quirks because what happened when you start, I feel like when you start a company, there should be like a deep purpose behind it, right? Of course, we all want to do well financially and economically, we want to do well, but I feel like there should be some real purpose behind it. And so when I started Quirks, it's really just to help my friends. I was already out of the league and I had friends that were calling me saying, hey, man, I'm trying to figure this thing out. I don't know if I'm going to get another contract. Just real life stuff.
Yeah.
And so I started just connecting them with my connections, the companies that I was speaking at. I would just call them up and say, hey, I got a guy who's interested in learning more about your company. He may be coming out of the league. And then from there, I formally just started as a company and said, hey, let's start bringing these guys together and figuring out what they really want. Which in hindsight was like one of the smartest things I could do because I ended up interviewing so many athletes and having so many conversations that helped me understand what they were looking for. And then from there, we started building the company out and then just by happenstance, we turned into a full service recruiting firm where we started going to companies, place for different types of talent. And then we push forward. And I always talk about leadership a lot because when it comes to leading a company, it's really interesting how leaders can miss the mark so much because we think that a lot of times your employees are supposed to just know how to be, right? Like just, they're just going to show up and it's going to be this great community and this great culture. And it doesn't work that way. As leaders, we have to set the page and set the tone for what we want this environment to be. And we fortunately now we get to work with companies in different ways. We get to help them build teams. We get to help them understand how to assess and evaluate not just talent, but also behaviors and personalities. And how do we know that Dave, Darren, Corey can all work together? Like, how do we know before we hire the person? What happens is we hire people and then put them with other people and say, let's see how that works. We made this investment into something that may not work. And we see a lot of companies lose some of their top people because they hired the wrong person after them. And those people end up saying, I can't work with this person. And companies don't like to admit when they made a hiring mistake. So they try to extend it out as long as possible. And so these are the things that we see. There's a lot of challenges in the hiring process itself. People talk about diversity a lot. Yeah. I think the problem is hiring in general because we can't get hiring right. We can't get diversity right. Those two things go hand in hand. If I can't understand how to put people together like a puzzle, then I'm not going to understand how to put these different backgrounds and experiences together in the same way. That's the big problem that we're trying to solve.
That's interesting. I got a question, taking it back a little bit. When your football career was over with and you had to make that pivot, that transition, like I know for myself and a lot of my friends, it's tough because you lose your identity, right? You see yourself as an athlete. I know you went on staging before. Did you have a period where that was tough for you? And do you have advice? I'm sure you do because you work with these athletes all the time. I always want to tell athletes, hey, what you learn playing sports is transferable. It's cheesy, but you could say you're still wearing a uniform. It's just a different uniform. But for you, what was that experience like? And what do you share with the people that you work with?
Yeah, so it's different for everyone because of how it happens. For me, I was on the uptick, got hurt, didn't really make it to where I wanted to be. So that's a different experience from someone that became an all-star or someone that became a pro, like an all-pro and won Super Bowl. Like those are different types of emotions that you're dealing with. And so it really depends. But from a generality standpoint, it's like a bad breakup. It's like you with a pretty girl and she cheated on you with your competition, right? And now once that happens, a lot of times you don't even want to mention her name. You don't want to be around football. And so that's why a lot of individuals get withdrawn because it's a devastating thing. It's, man, this just like how you got all of this attention and people recruiting you and you're going through this process where media is around all the time and then all of a sudden it's crickets, like no one cares, right? And so it's a devastating breakup that you have to overcome. And so it works differently for everybody. Some people, it happens, they get over it faster. Someone get over a breakup faster than others. And then for some, they never really recover fully from it. And so when I talk to the guys, it's more like, I try to get to them before that breakup happens to say, hey, let's start focusing on some other things so that you can have more of a smoother transition because we know what's going to happen, but we just need to be prepared for what our next move is going to be. Because if I'm already flirting with something over here and my girl break up with me, then I still have, you know, I have something to lean on, right? And so it's that idea of just making sure that you're protecting yourself because it is a business. You are a product. And the more they use a product, you know, the less valuable that product is going to become. And so at some point you have to emotionally, you know, prepare for that.
It's cool that you help a group of people that I don't think a lot of people think about. It's not just the big superstar athletes that you work with. You work with all kinds of athletes. And I mean, that's an interesting kind of niche that you found and how you're able to help that group of people.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. I mean, we work with Major League Baseball. We have a partnership with Major League Baseball and a lot of their minor league guys. That's the biggest bucket of athletes that they have, because they're trying to get somewhere. And you guys know how it is, especially when you're grinding that way.
Yeah.
It's all about, can you continue to come back year after year and fight for it? And then they get to a point, they may get to 3 or 4, maybe even year 5.
Yeah.
And they're like, man, I can't do this anymore. Like, the time it takes to put into it, they just lose the desire to do it. And so we're able to help them find a new path and find a new link.
I think it's great because I've had a lot of friends who stick with the minor leagues, Corey, for several years because they're afraid to make that change. And I'm trying to tell them, hey, you can go to the next level, or excuse me, not to the next level in sports, but you can take what you have and be super successful in business. And I heard you talk a little bit about how especially athletes can be great in sales and marketing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to be, the thing is, you have to be willing, you have to be 100% willing to be the towel boy, the water boy. So as an athlete, you have to be able to come down and say, whatever I need to do, I'll do. Yeah. Whatever it takes for me to learn, I'll learn. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the hardest things to get some of the guys to do, because you built up this image, or you have this lifestyle, or you have, and now it requires you to come all the way back to ground zero and start from the beginning. And that's the toughest part about it.
Yeah. I heard you talk about somewhere, don't even think about the money. If you just do that work, you have that mindset and you get good at what you're doing, the money is, it's like getting athletes to stop thinking about the money.
Yeah. And it's true. I know it's easier said than done, because a lot of times, especially when we talk about guys that come out of the minor league, they don't have a lot of money. They don't have a lot of resources that way. But if you can lock yourself into that mindset, you're going to be able to build up so much value and gain so much more skill sets and abilities, because you already have the internal stuff. You have the intangible stuff already, right? You just have to show, I am willing to start here and work hard as possible to get to the next level. Yeah. And once you do that, you start to see how those dots get connected.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Corey, can you talk a little bit? I love what you said. I've heard you say is you need to put yourself out there for those opportunities.
For sure. So one of the hardest things it is to do, I think as a human in general, but especially as an athlete, is to put yourself in a vulnerable position, right? The more vulnerable you are, the more chances that you're going to, you know, feel some type of pain or embarrassment. So the first time I had to do a sales call, I remember a script. It was horrible, like a horrible experience.
Yeah.
And it was like, man, this is crazy. Like I'm stumbling over my words. I feel so relieved when the call is over. I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait to hang up. It's a very vulnerable and humbling position to be in. But the more you put yourself in those positions, the better it is, right? Because the next call was a lot better. But then the next call keeps getting a lot better. And then eventually it's just like sports. It becomes second nature to you. But you have to be willing to come down there and be vulnerable, because people are going to look at you and say, man, do this guy have what it takes?
Yeah.
And what it takes is I just have to go through the ugly. Like, we don't want to go through the ugly, but it's
understand what you're saying about that. And I'll just finish off on this note is that if you sit there and wait for things to happen for you, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. You need to go out there and do it yourself.
For sure. You have to put yourself out there. And like I said, people look at failure differently than I do. I feel a lot of things is not failure. If I like I taught my kid how to ride a bike, right?
Yeah.
Him falling off the bike is not failure, right? Yeah. Him falling off the bike, getting up, running in the house and never coming back out again. That's what failure looks like, right? Him falling off the bike is just falling, right? It's just falling. Yeah. And so we're supposed to fall. It's okay to fall. And that's one of the messages that I try to give people. It's okay to fall. Go ahead, fall. Because the fall is easy, because you can get back up from the fall. But if you fail, that means you ran away and you gave up. And that's not what we do. And then also back to what we were talking about, Damon, about doing all you can do. That's where failure really, like failure happens at the top. This is where failure happens, right? So if I go in the weight room and I'm gonna do my max, I'm going to do as many as I can do before I fail. So people get the wrong idea about failure. They thinking if I go in the weight room and I do a couple and I stop, that's failure. But it's no, that's quitting. Failure is up here. So if I can do 50, I do 50. If I can do 2, I do 2. But whatever it is, I did all I can do. And then I fail right there. And then now I can start from right there. And then you just keep building on that.
You are so inspirational. I can really see how your career just took off immediately in this public speaking sort of space.
Oh, I appreciate that. I appreciate it. I think one of the things that I've been blessed with is just having, you know, being on teams.
Yeah.
I've always been the tough person. So people would always come to me for like support. And I've always been the supportive person. So what that did for me is make me become more aware of people and how people are operating. And so I pay attention to everything now. And I'm able to, when we talk about leadership, I have four kids, my wife and I, and I'm so in tune because each of the kids are different.
Yeah.
So I have to deal with them differently. A lot of times in leadership, we try to deal with everyone the same, right? Mm-hmm. We try to like, this is how I am as a leader, but it doesn't work that way. Like you have to come down to the individual that you're leading to be able to operate in how they're operating in so that they can receive what it is that you're trying to give them.
Yeah. Hey, we'll let viewers know how to get in touch with you and how to get in touch with Quirks and things like that. But to go back to that a little bit, you're helping ex-athletes, but you're also really helping companies like build better teams. So yeah. You've expanded your services in a pretty impressive way. Can you talk a little bit about putting the puzzle pieces together? Now I'm working with the company. I'm helping them do a better job of getting the right people on the bus. What have you learned?
One of the things that happened, we have a client, I won't say who they are, but they had issues with turnover. And we were helping them just place a lot of candidates with them. And I don't mind. We get paid very well to do that.
Yeah.
Right? But I saw a bigger problem. I'm like, okay, listen, we can give you people all day long. We can do that. We have some really great skilled recruiters. We can do that. Yeah. But there's a deeper issue that's going on here, right? There's something fundamentally happening inside of your company that's not allowing people to want to stay there. And so I always say this, and this is the truest thing, is people don't leave companies because of work, the work that they do. They leave companies because of the people. Mm-hmm. Or they stay with companies because of the people. And so it's about getting better at not just selecting people, but understanding how to put people together so that they can actually function as their best selves within inside of this company. Because that when you look at how people operate, people want to be in an environment where they're happy, right? Yeah. So every team that I've been on where we were happy with each other, we supported each other, right? So if someone had a tough time or something hard was happening, we'll go to the coach on their behalf, right? Yeah. It's the same thing within a company. If I don't care about Darren, I don't care what a tough time Darren's having, all right? I'm not coming to, because I don't care about, we don't have a good relationship. We don't like each other. So that's what happens in companies all the time, right? But the good companies that have these environments where people are supporting each other, you don't see as much burnout and stress, right? Why would you burn out when you're around people that support you?
Yeah.
You wouldn't burn out because you got a support system of people there that care about each other. And that's what we try to help companies promote, specifically by doing the appropriate assessments. Companies do assessments all the time, right? They want to know your personality and all this stuff, but they don't take those assessments and say, now, can these individuals actually coexist? Like I played on teams and sports where we have people on the team that could not play at the same time.
Yeah.
The coach was smart enough to know that, right? Like, hey, listen, we need both of these people, but they can't play at the same time. Because they won't work together.
Yeah.
But this is the big tragedy that happens with companies. $1.6 trillion on turnover every year. And we have a broken system.
Yeah. I know that we're getting close to wrapping up, but this is something I think, Corey, that you and I have in common. And you're probably not that familiar with Learn It, but Learn It, we're a learning and development company. We do all B2B training. And we were started about 28 years ago. And we were started by my father, Walt Lemby. It was his idea. And he was the biggest influence in my life. And going through a lot of your content, I saw that your situation was similar. Can you tell us a little bit about your father?
Yeah, my dad is my number one teacher, man. Like he's taught me so much. And a lot of it is passively. So I was a little kid that was always tied to my dad. Anything that he did, I'm trying to be around him. And he wasn't a sports guy, by the way. But I saw my dad come out of situations. He grew up, my dad born in 1950, so he's 73 right now. He grew up in a time, and we're in South Carolina, by the way, so this is where we're from. He grew up in a time where education wasn't that big for them. He literally plowed mules, picked cotton. He did those type of things. So he didn't get a high school diploma or anything like that. But practical, knowledgeable information, this guy is a genius. He's a genius. He figured out how to start his own business. I'm going to tell you this. So in the 80s, really quickly, right, he lost his job. He didn't lose his job. He quit his job, right? He quit his job because, quick story, he applied for this position. He wanted to get a promotion. Didn't get the promotion. They hired another guy. The guy happens to be a white guy, right? My dad didn't have a problem with that. After they hired the guy, they called my dad in the office and asked him to go train the guy.
I heard that.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Oh, my. And so my dad just, like, he was irate, man. He grabbed his coat. He walked out. Now, this is five kids and a wife. He walked out and, you know, now my mom is going berserk. You got a wife and five kids. What are you doing? Yeah. So anyway, my dad went, found this building. It was an empty building. It used to be a car wash. Convinced the guy to give him the building. He didn't have any money to really lease the building, but he told him, like, hey, I can make this business work. And what he did was he didn't change anything about the car wash. The name on the car wash, he didn't change. The branding, he didn't change anything. The only thing he did different was he offered to go pick people up and then drop people off. That was it. So there was a Walmart probably like a couple blocks from the car wash. So he was like, hey, I'll pick you up, take you to the Walmart, drop you off. We'll clean your car and then we'll come back and pick you up. This is perfect for people, especially stay-at-home moms during the day. And like, they're shopping at Walmart all the time. And this is probably like 88, 89 maybe. Yeah. And it just blew up.
Wow.
It just blew up. Yeah. And it was just the craziest thing. And he just made that one fundamental change. Hey, pick up, drop off. That's it.
Yeah. That's a brilliant idea.
That's awesome, Corey. That's an awesome story.
You know, yeah. So that guy, man, he teaches me so much.
Yeah.
Corey, how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah. Our website is quirks.com. That's quirkz.com. Easy to reach out to us through the website. Definitely connect with me on LinkedIn. If you guys are LinkedIn users, I love LinkedIn, love putting content on there. Those are the best ways to connect with us.
Yeah, we'll put all that information down below when it comes to when we post this up. And any last words to maybe especially other athletes out there that are thinking about what do I do next?
Or leaders.
Or leaders, yeah.
Yeah, for the athletes, it's really about getting started, getting acclimated to doing different things. From a leadership standpoint, it's about paying attention to people and serving people. That's really what it comes down to. A lot of times as leaders, we want to lead based upon how we like things to go, but we have to come and understand who people are. The best leaders I've ever been around are the people that understand the person, and they lead you based upon what they understand about you, and it's not about them. And so that's the biggest thing I would say with leaders.
And you always talk a lot about the important skills for leaders is to have patience and empathy, right?
For sure. It's a hard thing, by the way, because I have a lot of people that I lead, and patience is a very difficult thing because as a leader, I can see more in people than they can see in themselves. And that's a hard place to be because you get stuck trying to pull them along and you can't pull them along. Like, it doesn't work that way. You have to inspire them to move along. And the more you do that, they're going to move along at their pace and they're not going to, you can't make their pace be faster. It doesn't work that way. You just got to keep inspiring them to move along.
Yeah. Speaking of inspiring, I could just listen to you all day. You got to be one of the most inspiring guests I think we've ever had for sure. And it was just an absolute pleasure to spend time with you today, Corey.
Hey, appreciate you guys so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. All right, that's it. We'll see you all on the next episode of the Learn It All podcast.